Are you ready for this, Paris Studio Sex Kitten Swamp Bitches?
Picture this. Recording studio somewhere far, far away.
The Merry White House Experience! Right. This week has seen momentous changes in South Africa. Meanwhile, Margaret Thatcher has been consistent as usual. Whenever there's a piece of political good news, Thatcher sees it as a personal vindication. Eastern Europe, a result of deterrence. South Africa, a result of no sanctions. Why can't she just face up to the one reality? Mark, a result of shagging Dennis.
But there is one group of people for whom the release of Nelson Mandela really is terrible news. Students. It's just another nail in the coffin of the voice of protest. How are students going to demonstrate now?
Right, everybody. One, two, three. All right. But just don't do it again, okay?
All right. But just don't do it again, okay?
But students can at least enjoy the satisfaction of knowing that it was definitely them who caused Mandela's release.
Mr. de Klerk. Terrible news.
What is it?
Essex Poly Union have voted not to buy in any more Del Monte fruit juice for the refectory.
Right. Well, that's it. That's it. I want Mandela out of his cell this minute. And don't listen to any of his nonsense about still needing more time to work out his parting.
Free.
The Merry White House Experience. Wow.
Well, here tonight in the studio, we've got a fairly good sort of cross-section of the public. Now, how many of you actually regard yourselves as working class? One person is working class. But how many of you regard yourselves as upper class? Nobody, right? And how many of you regard yourselves as middle class? So most of you are no class at all. And how many of you regard the whole concept of class distinction as a politically motivated tool of bourgeois capitalism to hold our society in its reaction and acceptance of the status quo? How many of you think status quo haven't done anything decent since down, down, deeper and down?
Tonight we ask, who are the public? What do we mean when we say the public? And how do we judge people's public status?
Now, there's no doubt that Britain is the most class-conscious country in the world. But the old social categories, upper, middle and working classes, have now been superseded by the more sophisticated classifications demanded by the advertising industry. They divide us all into A's, B's, C1s, C2s, D's and E's.
And people who like family fortunes.
Now, what used to be the working class are now called C2DEs. Now, this is all part of a campaign to emasculate their political strength. There's no doubt that the theories of Karl Marx would have had a lot less impact if they'd rested on slogans like power to the C2DE socio-economic group. People would now be standing around shopping precincts selling copies of socialist C2DE.
Class distinctions start early, with schools. Posh kids get sent to private nursery schools for no discernible reason. Charles and Diana spent thousands of pounds a year so that Prince Harry can learn that a hedge is a good place for a quick piss.
And later on, of course, posh kids go to public schools, so-called because most of the public can't get anywhere near them. Public schools are highly old-fashioned and still use all sorts of archaic terms long abandoned in state schools. Big school, remove, refectory, prep, textbook, teacher.
Now, sport rates very highly at these sorts of schools. It's commonly held, for example, that the Battle of Waterloo was won on the playing fields of Eton. This is highly unlikely.
Lord Wellington, the French cavalry advancing. The infantry have skirted our right flank and 4,000 of our soldiers are dead or wounded. What should we do?
Well, send Todger off to silly mid-off and put a spinner on.
Sir, we need to...
Oh, fine shot, sir. Tell Wizzo to get some pads on, will you?
Public schools also play rugby instead of football. This is because football matches against public schools used to take 8.5 hours. Since at half-time, while the opposition sucked their bits of orange, Harrow would settle down to pâté, duck à l'orange, profiteroles, cheeses, wine and port. Rugby is also preferred at public schools because in the event of any upper-class pupils being clever, 7 years in the front row of the scrum leaves them sufficiently brain damaged to ensure a smooth path into merchant banking or the cabinet. For some reason, newspapers and magazines seem to think that we're all endlessly interested in what upper-class people do. The Daily Mail and the Daily Express both devote entire pages to their gossip column, i.e. a load of tedious tittle-tattle about people you've never heard of and never want to.
Word reaches my shell-like ear that Viscount Hetherington Featherington of Lower Piddlesville is currently to be seen escorting Lady Davinia and Airhead Forbes, daughter of the late Duchess of Croydon and Sir Gaspard Humpington Carthorse. The Viscount recently left Oxford, where he attended St. Nepotism's College and gained a degree in vomiting in nice restaurants. He was previously romantically linked to Lady Lavinia No-Brain, daughter of Lord Useless and winner of the 1959 Derby. Friends say a June wedding seems likely for the happy couple, although my usual sources tell me they're already at it like dogs.
It's the Mary Whitehouse Experience.
This is a song for anybody who's ever rung a radio phone in and has not yet learned that a problem shared is a problem that's going to make 500,000 people listening to it on the radio piss themselves laughing. Yeehaw! Woo! Hello there.
Hey, 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 I'm the late DJ on a well-known radio station. Well, let me tell you, cousin, that the phones are buzzing with tales of mystery and masturbation.
The lines are humming as the calls keep coming with tales of tragedy and loss. So I tell them on the air that I really, really care when the truth is I couldn't give a toss.
Whoa, ring, ring, ring.
Well, my problem's kind of solitary.
Ring, ring, ring.
Because my eyesight's gone and my palms are hairy.
Ring, ring, ring.
And my girlfriend doesn't know.
Well, now she does, and all because of late night radio.
Hello, John from Swindon.
Hee, won't you listen to me? I don't know how to put this. Well, it ain't no joke, I'm the sort of bloke who's sexually attracted to inanimate objects.
I'm having an affair with a wingback chair. I'm not like other fellas. And I'm forming a menage with a two-car garage. And my futon's really jealous.
Whoa, ring, ring, ring.
Well, my mum's got crabs and my dad's got scurvy.
Ring, ring, ring.
My cat's dropped dead and my dog's dead pervy.
Ring, ring, ring.
And I'm feeling really low.
Well, let it all out and we'll all fall about on the late night radio. If you've got a problem, don't despair. Air your troubles on the air. Ring us now and I'll tell you this. 1,000,000 listeners will take the piss. Whoa.
Thanks very much indeed for calling.
Ho, 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 I'm an ordinary Joe with a problem that is tricky. Well, I was having it away with a sheep called Ray till he came to an end that was really sticky.
I remember his bleats in between the sheets. They used to make me randy. But Ray was very woolly, so I made myself a pulley and the lamb chops came in handy.
Whoa, ho, ho, ring, ring, ring.
Well, my girlfriend thinks that my knob's too weeny.
Ring, ring, ring.
And I think I'm Benito Mussolini.
Ring, ring, ring.
Well, I think you ought to know.
When you've rung off, they'll start to scoff on the late night radio.
If feeling really bad inside, I'll make you listen to Madonna or Billy Idol. Then you're bound to end up suicidal
on the late night radio.
Big finish, Virgil. Don't touch that dial! I go.
Thank you.
Right, by the time this gets repeated, most people will have suffered the annual humiliation that is St. Valentine's Day. Now, here is a standard Valentine, but the author has made one classic mistake. See if you can spot it.
Dear Christine, I love you. Yours sincerely, Rob Newman, flat 13, 13 Bedford Gardens, Kensington, W8, 7EE. Daytime tell, 229.
Now, tradition demands that the Valentine sender should remain anonymous, or almost anonymous. Your identity should be tantalisingly shrouded in mystery.
Dear Christine, I love you. Yours sincerely, Nob Ruman. Flat 13, Bedford Gardens, Kensington, WA.
Yes, yes. Although, on the other hand, you shouldn't get too cryptic.
Dear Christine, I love you. Yours sincerely, Flange of Baboons in Nottinghamshire Mining Country. Lawrence, perhaps? 3-6.
One way of rather smoothly suggesting it was you is to casually drop in one of the lines that was written on the Valentine when you next meet on some veranda 3 months later, although one has to be careful about which line.
You know, Christine, this summer night may be many things, but it isn't sold in aid of the Notting Hill Housing Trust. More wine.
Still, it could have been worse.
You know, Christine, this summer night may be many things, but it isn't Rob Newman, flat 13, Bedford Gardens, Kensington.
Valentine cards can come from many different angles, like Big Johnny Holmes. I'm sorry.
Who got that incidentally?
No, shut up. One motive is often to try and undermine an ongoing relationship.
Dear Christine, I hate you. Yours sincerely, your boyfriend. P.S. Rob Newman's address, apparently, is flat 13.
Also, it is imperative to post your Valentine card from a different postal area than your own, although this shouldn't be taken too far.
I'm standing here in Beirut, but there aren't any bloody post boxes left.
But some people's uncontrollable feelings lead to them taking up a whole newspaper page.
Rob Newman arrested for persistent harassment. Stand on!
What we'd like to know now is, has anyone sent any Valentines yet at all? Okay, no one at all. Audience of completely sad bastards. Okay, what about you, madam? Have you ever received a strange Valentine of any sort? Or Valentine at all, really?
No.
No, you've never received one?
No.
Okay, not a lot of comedy there, Rob.
Has anyone in the audience as a whole received any strange ones at all, ever, or any cards?
Someone must have. That man has received... no, that man has received some Valium, not some Valentines, I think. Wake up!
Don't worry, nobody noticed you fell asleep.
Oh dear. Have you ever received any strange Valentine, sir? Or perhaps an alarm call, or...
Now and again. Now and again.
Now and again. And what's the strangest Valentine you've ever received?
I wouldn't like to say.
You wouldn't like to say? Was it that anorak, perhaps?
Easy, Dave. Easy, Dave.
Yeah, all right, Dave. No.
Easy, Dave.
Okay, Rob, if you'd like to start... What Rob is going to do now is he's going to have an auction, right, to find out who's had the most Valentines ever on St. Valentine's Day.
Okay, I'll start the bidding myself with none. So, any advance on none?
One.
One, you over there. I can't believe that. any advance on one? Promise not to get on your case. Four. Okay, anybody not being stupid. I notice you're wearing a T-shirt that says NT for nursing. That was given to you by the people who look after you, I guess. Any advance on the Traxic Man's impressive, although I think Norris might have,
may possibly not ratify this one.
Impressive four. Any more on four?
Minus four.
I guess why. Any more on four?
Two.
Two, okay. Thank you, Kenneth Clark. Better politics, I don't mind. This is going quite well.
This year has had loads and loads of really important and exciting things going on. But for me, the most important thing was the World Darts Final. Did anyone see that at all? No one. Oh, you should watch it because they've got the world's greatest commentator ever on it, and that's Sid Waddell. On the final itself, they had two guys sitting in suits, and the camera panned round, caught the two guys sitting in suits, and Sid Waddell went, "The two men are Russian delegates. They're going to take World Darts over the Urals. This is Perestroika." I just thought, that's great. I wish Sid Waddell had actually commentated on the Ceausescu's execution. It's a 3-bullet finish. They've got the wife. Double top. It's there. What's that? Drugs in weightlifting we've had. That was weird. Like, drugs, yes. Lifting heavy objects. No chance.
Oh, man, I was so out of it last night. I did 180 kilos, right?
We don't need this. We don't need this kind of, like, drugs testing. What we need is an IQ testing. That's what we need for sports. But I want to find out if Gatting really is as stupid as he says he is. Gatting, and that's the thing I really dislike about the tour, is the fact that the commentators always call Gatting the Rebel Cricket Tour. He's not a rebel. What's he doing, walking on the pitch with a leather jacket going, what do you need wickets for, man? But the thing that actually got me most this week was Lawson, because Lawson's getting 200 grand per year for doing 2 days a week work. This is the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the man who calculated the budget using his chins as an abacus. And he went straight into the job. He didn't go on a restart or anything. Where are you going, Nigel? I'm gunning doon the job club. The Tory party don't need... Well, they've got their own job club. It's called the CBI. But what I want to see, when a minister resigns, I want to see them graft. Once they've given up the job, I want to see them really work hard. Once a minister resigns, I want their next public statement to be, do you want fries with that? But the thing that gets me most, how can you actually have, like, Kenneth Clark, an ex-public schoolboy, how can you have an ex-public schoolboy as a health minister? Like, their idea of a health check is to go up to matron and say, I don't feel very well, can you cover me in swarfiga and hit me with a cricket bat? never trust anyone who spells health check with a Q. You know, it's bad news. And I think the unions are just crap. They have 15 minutes of action. You have a cup of tea, a fag reader, it's over. It's over 15 minutes. The unions are moving so far to the right wing that I reckon the next major bit of industrial action will be a huff. Today, workers went on wildcat sulk. They're refusing to smile at management. Soldiers are on standby to go in to do grin duty. The thing that really got me was what a crap demonstration the Maoris had. No bums or anything. Because normally when the Maoris demonstrate, there's a bum. And here is the Queen, she looks, oh my God, look at the plumber's crack on that. You know, that's what you expect. And they throw a T-shirt at it. What use is that? What damage is that going to do? A T-shirt, I reckon that actually what the T-shirt had was a little thing saying, I'm with stupid and a hand pointing to Prince Philip.
And now part two of the holiday experience. Last week we looked at holidays in Britain. This week, foreign holidays.
Now in a survey on the holiday programme this week, it was stated that 40% of British people who've gone abroad say they wouldn't bother going again if it wasn't for the weather. Now does this indicate that British are a nation of unadventurous, narrow-minded xenophobics? Yes, it does, actually. But there is another good reason for not going abroad, and that is to avoid the sort of British people who go abroad. Not the ones who go to Benidorm and eat chips. We're talking about the real travel bores.
I was in Afghanistan during the fighting, yeah. And I actually spent 2 weeks with the Mujahideen and helped them capture two Soviet rocket launchers.
In other words, I once changed planes at Kabul Airport.
Oh, God, right, yeah. I mean, going out of Turkey, I was really bricking it at the airport because I was carrying so much stuff.
In my back pocket, I had a nearly full packet of anodyne. Travel bores also say things like,
I really lived like a native.
I got dysentery, Bill Hartsia and beriberi, and spent 4 months on the toilet.
I came face to face with one of the most poisonous snakes in the world.
In Sydney Zoo. However, there is one phrase that is more hideous than any other.
I've got a few photos I'm going to show you sometime.
Now, this means that several hundredweight of True Print wallets are sitting in the boot of his car. Beware especially if it's a man, because men always use the opportunity of holidays to see what they look like with a beard before they have to go back to work. Likely as not, the photos will reveal the progress of the person going away looking like Jason Donovan and coming back looking like James Anderton. Travel bores have one other major feature. They always want their destination to be unspoilt.
Of course, we went to Turkey.
Oh, but it's ruined now. I mean, 10 years ago, right? Ten years ago. I mean, we went to Upper Borneo.
Borneo! Oh, God, it's been so spoiled. It's just a tourist trap now. They've ruined it. It's got, like, drains, fresh water, telephones.
Well, this year, we thought we might try the Siberian tundra.
Oh, God! I mean, it's just like Benidorm there now. I mean, 10 years ago.
Now it's time for the punchline competition. And before the show, the studio audience were asked to come up with a witty answer to the following punchline. What did the Maori woman say when she threw a wet cloth at the Queen? And I've collected them all in, and here we go. What did the Maori woman say when she threw a wet cloth at the Queen? Can I have my cloth back? And that's from Roland Webber and Deborah Levison, who are on a job share scheme. Cop this, Liz. It'll sort your corgis out a treat! Exclamation mark. And that's from Tracy Lee. He could probably make Gary Davis laugh a lot with that one. When are you going to allow blacks in the royal family? And that's from Bernie Grant. Best so far. Dunno. Ricky Adams. Who instantly, if you didn't know, is something of a celebrity himself. He's the man who actually thought up the Raiden advert. If she drowns, she's a witch. And that's from Nikki Christofides, apparently Cyprus's premier alternative comedian. You spilt your pint, you mop it up. And that's from Captain Cabin, in joke. Oh, no, sorry, absolutely out of the question.
There will now be a short recess.
Here's the tampon you ordered, madam. And that's from Dr. White.
The reason I didn't read it out is I thought Mark Thomas would complain, you know.
No, I like that one very much.
All right, OK.
That's winning as far as I
Okay, great. Well, here you are. Michael Fagin asked me to give you this back. It's the wrong size. That's from Warren. So the winner is, and I'm sure this will be on Pick of the Week on Radio 4, here's the tampon you ordered, madam. And that's from Dr. White. Thank you.
And now, the Mary Whitehouse Experience is proud to present our very own mini-series. A towering epic saga of love, hate, sex, passion, intrigue, sex, international jet-setters, lust, sex, jealousy, high finance, sex, and sex. Part one of A Hollywood Wife of Substance takes Manhattan. Berlin, 1945. Sex.
Push, Mrs. Protagonist, push!
It's a boy!
And a girl!
Congratulations, it's identical twins. Well, one of them's got a villi, obviously, but otherwise identical.
Ah, Dad's army's finished. Oh, no, in this chaos, the two newly born twins have been separated.
...1990, and Marcus Henson stretches luxuriously on his first-class seat as the BA-747 begins its final descent into Heathrow.
Another scotch, please, with ice, a spot of soda, a sparkler, a piece of mangy orange peel, and one of those really naff plastic monkeys that cling to the side of the glass.
But it's 7:30 in the morning.
Hey, foxy chick, you're answering me back. I like that. I'll meet you tonight. You won't be able to resist me, smooth-talking, sexist knobhead, though I am.
Could you put your stylophone away, please, sir?
Craig? Marcus, I'm in the big silver bird, Craig, just about to touch down in the world's greatest city. We must meet for chow, and I've got some ideas to run past you, okay?
Your drink, sir.
By the way, hot babe, I noticed three of the engines are on fire and the tail fin's fallen off, but don't worry. My father once got a Lancaster back from a raid on Germany with all four engines gone, cranking the one remaining propeller by hand.
Where was he coming from?
Berlin.
What was that?
This is the captain speaking. I'm sorry about that noise. The machine that goes ding-dong isn't working.
Meanwhile, in a vast corporate skyscraper somewhere in New York.
Look, Bunty, you've got to sell your shares now.
Don't bullshit me, Julie. I call the shots round here. I built this company with my bare hands. I started out with nothing. My mother was a Polish immigrant without two pennies to rub together. Then she met my father. He had two pennies. She rubbed them together. Eventually, all the pattern came off and no shop would take them.
That's what you think, Bunty, but do you really believe they were your real parents?
What do you mean?
Has it never struck you as odd, with a name like Bunty Froheim von Obergruppenführer, that your parents are called Hotchkiss and live in Pinner?
You mean?
Yes, Bunty. I'm afraid your parents gave you a crap name.
Meanwhile, in London.
You'll like this place, Craig. One of my favourite haunts when I'm in London. Food's fantastic and the service is superb.
Can I help you?
Big Mac and fries, please.
Still with the same girl, Marcus. Still in love.
Love? Love? Love's just a faded rose, a torn photograph, an embarrassing stain on the pillowcase.
Pillowcase?
Sheet. Sorry. Not pillowcase, never. Women, Craig, they screw you up. There's been a few Louise, Topaz, Hester, Macy, Jocelyn, Melinda, Melissa, Tricity, Dory...
Tricity? You mean Felicity. Tricity is a make of cooker.
I said they screw you up. You think I enjoyed going out with a cooker? But a cooker's loyal, Craig. A cooker doesn't walk out on you or dump you.
Meanwhile, in a sudden flashback scene...
Achtung! Das Mittagessen, Franz Beckenbauer, Vorspring durch Technik, Scheitschopfen.
Why? Why have you brought me here?
Bring in the most feared and hideous interrogator in Germany.
Mr. Prisoner, I put it to you. That some people might say... That are not clearly me, but some people might say, ah, if I pulled their fingernails out. So I put it to you.
Ah!
Who is the unfortunate prisoner? Where is Bunty's long-lost brother? What is Craig's relationship with his cooker? Is Marcus as much of a turd as he appears? Part 2 after news at 10. Sex.
You've been listening to The Merry White House Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, Mark Thomas, Dune McKeon, and the Tracy Brothers. The sound was by Martha Knight, the producer was Armando Iannucci, and the teacher was Mr. Pratt from the Hayden School in Northwood.